STR podcasts are brought to you through the generous support of people just like you. You can support these podcasts by making a gift online at str.org or by phone at 1-800-2-REASON.
Hello, I'm Melinda the Enforcer. I'm here with Greg Kokel, and this is the hashtag STRS podcast. What are you going to say?
I'm just trying to be professional.
Well, professional would be to say hi.
Hi.
He's trying to make our producer laugh this time, so I thought maybe he was just laughing too much. So this is the hashtag STRS podcast where it just gets a little bit too silly sometimes. This is also the fourth episode of it. We've recorded in a row, so Greg keeps getting... Now he's making faces. Anyway, so that's a face I'm not used to. I'm used to a lot of your faces. Let's just get moving, okay? We're answering questions we get from Twitter using hashtag STRask. Greg has 4 minutes. Let's just push through, okay? This comes from Square Donut.
I'm just minding my own business here.
I think the oxygen is getting thin in this little booth, and that could be the cause of this.
All right.
How could God decree sinful acts to happen if he is so holy that even a single minor sin is intolerable to his character?
Well, I guess this depends on the definition of the word decree. And, excuse me, I'm not very clever in all of this particular stuff. This is more high theology, beyond my pay grade a little bit. But let me just venture a characterization. And that is God's decrees... entail all of the free will choices that men make. So he doesn't start in a sense with a blank slate, and then says, "Here's the way I want it." Okay, well, I want this, this, and this to happen. Now that means that a bunch of people are going to have to do some really bad things. So now I'm going to make them do these bad things so they can get this other thing going on here. That's not my sense, because I think if that's the way it worked, and I think some have characterized it very mm-hmm. close to that, mm-hmm. well, then God would be responsible for evil. The text is really clear that in him there is no darkness at all. He's not tempted by evil. He doesn't do evil. He is perfectly good. He is a morally perfect creature. So that option is not open to me with my classical understanding of the character of God. And so I'm going to say then the decree is going to be God ordaining things in such a way that he gets what he wants, even in the midst of sinful acts of other people. Now, if you ask me to ground that is, explain how that actually works in the mechanics of the thing, I can't do that. I don't know that. This is within the web of the mind of God. And I don't think that mortals have access to that kind of thing. I think it's just beyond us.
Do you?
Do I what?
Have access to that kind of thing?
No, I'm a mortal. Unless you thought
I
was
in. Oh, you are.
Yes, quite the mortal. And so I don't have access to that. I don't know. And I think this is the point where we just have to, okay, we can go no further. I think of it like a, if you think of like a wheel and the spokes going to the hub. The hub is in mystery, okay? The hub is just shrouded in mystery. Yet you can travel closer on the spokes to where the hub is than where you may already be. Some people want to go stay out there on the rim and say, well, it's all a mystery in there, so we can't understand anything. We don't want to take away any mystery. I think, look at it. We can still figure out some things based on what God has told us, and there's plenty left for mystery. And that's moving closer along the spokes, closer to the hub. So we can move closer to it, but we're never going to be able to penetrate. That is, we're never going to be able to get it all completely squared away. And I'm comfortable with that. I do think we can, you know, we have these decrees, and we know some things about God and his character and that. And so we've got to come up with an answer that holds all of those things in tension. And trying to refine it much further, it seems, requires that we go deeper into the fog where we're not allowed.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in compatible with what you're saying, I think a lot of people, what they mean when they say God decrees sinful acts is a way of recognizing God remains sovereign over absolutely everything that occurs. He's powerful over everything. He has authority over everything. Yet sinful acts still occur. So therefore, in some sense, in his sovereignty, he has decreed these things to happen, not in the sense that he has ordered them to happen or caused them to happen or gotten involved in those things to happen. But obviously, since he's in charge, everything happens with his permission. Mm-hmm. He has permitted these things to happen.
Yeah, they are allowed and entailed by his sovereign will.
Because nothing can happen outside of his authority and sovereignty.
But not caused. Now, the way to... Now, this one way to ground it, that is, explain how it happens, is to say, well, God causes all these things, but now you're into a different place altogether.
Right.
And so that's not acceptable to me.
Right. Okay, next question comes J.K. Wood 1. Is God outside of time? If yes, how does he decide to create? If no, does eternity past imply traversal of infinite days?
Well, this is I have an answer for this, and it's a little bit more complex question. My view is that God participates in temporal action, but that doesn't require that he has always been temporal. He could have been atemporal until the creation of the earth and the creation of the universe, rather, and that act was his first act of temporality. And once he enters into temporal becoming. When I say becoming, I don't mean that he changes into something else. He just begins to participate in temporal activity. The questioner has a very astute observation, and that is kind of implicit in his question, if God is atemporal, then nothing happens. Time is what keeps all the events from happening simultaneously. If there are events and there's no time, they all happen simultaneously. There's a name for this. It's called the B theory of time, B for bad, because it's the materialist view of time, although there are non-materialists that hold it.
And our sense of passage of time is a mere illusion.
It's
because there's
correct.
Nothing truly before and after.
That's right.
It's just our perspective
and
of
to make it easier to conceptualize that notion, all you have to do is think of a book, a story, let's say Lord of the Rings. So Lord of the Rings has before and after relationships to it, but no true time relations. There is nothing happening in time. There's no passage of time. There are just events that happen logically prior and posterior to each other.
In the story, so
we know that in the story, first one thing happens, and then these other things happen. But it's only before or after in the storyline. The whole book sits there with nothing going on. All parts of the story coexist at the same moment, so to speak.
The characters in the story are not experiencing before and after. They're not changing as the story
yes.
goes along. They exist
no
equally at every page in that book.
That's right.
And that would be the universe
equally
if there was no
at
time.
That stage of their personal development.
Right.
Right. And so and C.S. Lewis characterized God's relationship to time like this in Mere Christianity, but with all respects, I think that he was mistaken here. Because if you have God then outside of the book of time, here is history, and he can flip the pages and he can go fore and aft, earlier and later, well, two things. This means that time doesn't happen for us. That, as you pointed out, the passage of time, which seems the most obvious thing to everyone, is just an illusion. No time is passing. That seems so wildly counterintuitive, I could never accept it as being true. Secondly, even if God is moving from one part of the book to another, first he's observing the beginning, then he's observing the end, and then he's observing the middle of the book, as it were, or beholding it all at once. If he's doing it sequentially, then time is passing for him. And if he's beholding it all at once, then he's never creating.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is happening.
Part of the consequence of
everything's frozen.
And one of the biggest problems with the consequence of the B theory of time is that God never created the universe. The universe is eternal. As God is.
Think of that book of history as always being there forever.
And yet we know the universe began.
Yeah. That seems to be the best take on it. So I think the idea that God being outside of time has serious problems, and there is no biblical reason why we have to say that. The only thing that's demanded by orthodoxy is that God is that God is eternal, that he had no beginning and he had no end. So this then solves both problems that were raised by the question. The first problem, God is temporal, so he can create. At least at the time he's creating, he is now participating in a temporal universe. Before that, he could be atemporal and just existing in a non-temporal way. And therefore, there is no problem of past regression accomplishing an infinite
Transversing an infinite.
There you go. Thank you. Transversing an actual infinite. And for some of you, you're thinking, what the heck is he talking about? Well, this one's not for you. That's all I can say. Those of you who have delved into these issues know what I'm referring to there. And William Lane Craig is very helpful in this regard. I'll just recommend, do we still have that time, God, time, and eternity? Recording? Well, you might. For a long time, we carried a CD of Bill Craig giving a lecture, two-part lecture called God, Time, and Eternity. And it was one of the most elegant lectures I've ever heard. And so I recommend that.
And if it's not in our store, I bet there's something on YouTube.
Yeah, or through
Reasonable Faith.
Reasonable Faith.
Oh, yeah. Check Reasonable Faith.
Yeah.
Okay, next question comes from John Coogan. In Canada, euthanized patients are donating their organs. He doesn't mention if this is voluntary euthanasia or an involuntary euthanasia, but euthanized patients are donating their organs. Would it be ethical to receive such an organ for a transplant?
Yeah, this is a hard question.
That's why they came to you.
Yeah, oh, good luck. a question like this was raised about things that happened in the past that aren't happening now, but whose effect, maybe for good, continues into the present. And can we use that for our benefit? Like some of the studies that were done by Joseph Mengele in the Third Reich that had to do with hypothermia. It was grotesque the way he conducted the experiments, but he got valuable information that we could use now. Is that knowledge tainted because of the way it was gained? My view is no. I think we can take that terrible circumstance and maybe get something redemptive out of it. But this circumstance may be different, though, and the difference is that it creates a. This
a
might then create what's the word?
A market.
A market. Thank you. A market for euthanizing human beings.
Because in the case of the Nazis and these other, these are past things that have already. They're over. It's taken place.
Mm-hmm.
Just like some of the vaccines that early on might have been developed with aborted fetuses, aborted babies, right?
The question...
It was done. So can we, should we benefit from it now? But these things are past, they're over, they're not continuing. In this case, the euthanizing of patients is continuing, and we create a market,
okay, so here's,
we can actually encourage more euthanasia.
Okay, so here's the question, and I think this will be a good way of putting it. If there is a person who was murdered, whose organs were available for us to use, would we have trouble using those moral difficulties, using those organs, given the fact that the means of death was immoral? I think most people would say no. The man's dead. He's dead. Okay. But now we can make good use of the organs. Okay. However, if there was an organ business that went around murdering people to get organs. And actually, there are things like that that happen with kidneys now. The person's not murdered, but they put in an ice bath and they have their kidneys stolen from them. And, you know, there's terrible stories like that that people hear. Well, that's different because now the purchasing of the use of the organ is abetting an industry that continues to do wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the question here is, is the use of the organs abetting the industry, encouraging or increasing the industry, or is it simply the making the best of a bad situation? If people are going to get euthanized for their own reasons, I don't see any problem with using their organs for someone else. If they are encouraged to get euthanized or they are being euthanized against their will, like
or without
either,
their permission.
Or without their permission. So this could be, there's active euthanasia, there's There's voluntary. Let me back up and put it this way. There is voluntary, there is non-voluntary, and there is involuntary. So voluntary is when a person says, I want to die, euthanize me. They're making the choice to get euthanized for their own reasons, regardless of what's going to happen to their body parts. I don't see a problem using body parts, organ donations for that. Others are euthanized without their permission, but not against their permission. So this is non-voluntary. Maybe they're in a coma for a long time, and so then they just decide, well, we're going to pull the plug on this person. We're not going to feed them. We're going to make them die, and we're going to use their body parts for donation. That, to me, is more questionable because it begins to look like maybe they're taking a person who is, in a tough spot, and they are euthanizing them in order to get the cash crop. And the third category is when people say, no, I don't want to die, and they kill them anyway. And this is happening all over the world, Great Britain famously, and in Netherlands, etc. Yeah. So, and in those cases, these people are dying against their will. Now, even when a person dies against their will, murder, for example, I don't think it's wrong to take use the organs for donation, but if they're getting killed to get the organs, now that's a problem. Probably the safest place to be on this question is to say, well, if it's voluntary euthanasia, okay. If it's non-voluntary or involuntary euthanasia, that looks dirty, and I'm not going there. That would be the safest place to go. Though I can think of circumstances, even with non-voluntary and involuntary, where using the organs would be morally legitimate. As long as it wasn't the motivation for killing the person and continues to be the motivation to kill other people. That's the issue.
On euthanasia, I think the safest place would be just to say no, period, even for voluntary. Because what we've seen over and over, every place that euthanasia has been legalized, even if it was only legalized for voluntary euthanasia, it eventually slipped into involuntary euthanasia. We have seen the slippery slope every single time euthanasia, voluntary euthanasia has been. And so it just seems to me, even if we try to restrict this to voluntary euthanasia cases, this whole issue just seems to slide down the slippery slope really fast and have no controls on it.
Yeah, I know that happens, and I agree with you in principle. It isn't clear to me at all that organ donations have anything to do with that sliding down that slippery slope.
I'm not saying it does. I'm just saying
you just stay
voluntary seems to slide right so quickly into non-voluntary and involuntary. I just think even if drew a fair moral line at voluntary, not that I think it just becomes, it can so easily create that market and that would incentivize non-voluntary and involuntary euthanasia.
So there you go. There's a number of different issues there to people to consider, and people have to make their own mind. But at least now you've got more
issues
to work with. Yeah.
Right.
It's sticky.
Yeah, it is. It would just be good if we didn't have euthanasia at all, and then we wouldn't have this question whatsoever.
A similar question comes up with the remains of aborted children. Very similar kind of thing.
Right. Same kind of reasoning.
Yeah, I think you can make good use of a corpse as long as the use that you make of the corpse doesn't
encourage
more corpses.
Right.
The production of more corpses. You can't encourage a corpse because they're, dead.
But okay.
You
so,
know what I mean.
On this very tragic topic, it's the end of the podcast.
Have a nice day.
#STRask. Excuse me. Send us your questions on Twitter using #STRask. Greg has 4 minutes or less to answer them. Sometimes we give him a little grace on this one because it's an important topic. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. I'm here with Greg Kokel, and I'm Melinda the Enforcer, and we're both with Stand to Reason. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Stand to Reason. Our podcasts are made possible by friends of this ministry through their generous support. You can support STR by making a gift online at str.org.